And when they left Boston for here, a leather lung fan, and they have a few in Boston, yelled, "We didn't lose to the British, and we're not going to lose to British Columbia." Despite that adversity, they followed their coach to the high road, and the high road is the road to the cup. No icing. For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup. And they pour on to celebrate with Tim Thomas, their heroic goaltender.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. Nick Fitzy Stevens is in the house with us as well. There are obviously local radio and TV voices for every National Hockey League team, but the national voice for the NHL for a long, long time announced his retirement earlier this week. He is Doc Emrick, who joins us on the Harbor One Hotline. Hello, Doc. How are you?
I'm good, Dale. Gee, I'm glad you reminded me of what that Bruin fan said, because that's one of my favorites. There was another one at Fenway Park the day of the Winter Classic. The Bruins had thanks to Sweet Caroline and everything else that took place that day, they had come from behind and beat their friends from Philadelphia. And as I was leaving out the right field exit of Fenway Park, I stopped by the bleacher washroom, and inside was not only a curmudgeon-y Bruins fan, probably 60, 65 years old, but two or three Flyers fans. And as they were about to leave and go back out into the ramp and runway, he said, as they were parting, "Thanks for coming, Philly. Thanks for coming." And I thought to myself, you know, that's just perfect. That's a great Bruins fan saying goodbye and come back another time.
I don't know anybody who's collected more stories over the years, who's talked to more people over the years. And my guess is you're going to miss those conversations as much as you're going to miss calling the games.
Yeah, and you know what, Dale? I noticed, too, that that was starting to become a problem the day I did the last game with Eddie Olczyk next to me on March the 11th in Chicago against San Jose, and you probably had the same thing going on wherever the Bruins happened to be at that time, because the league understandably came out with a list of guidelines earlier in the week that we couldn't go into dressing rooms anymore, and that meant, you know, no sitting next to a player in the dressing room stall and learning things that were always fun to gather about players and share with the fans. And then that very day that San Jose was playing Chicago, there were additional guidelines about being 6 feet away and having a boom microphone to interview any player. No coaches' interviews on the bench, that if you were going to have the inside glass location that Brian Boucher had, you had to go on the ice to get there rather than going through the team dressing room to get through the bench area and to it. And a lot of understandable things given what we were knowing and then what we learned a lot later that caused the 4.5 months between games. So we were starting to lose some of that at that time. And that's probably the greatest thing that you and I were able to do during the period of time that I had in being around NHL players. And I do have a copy of your book staring at me right now with all of those great stories that you collected over a period of time. And the people that publish my book really, really like you.
How about
and
that?
They told me that. Yeah, they told me that. And I have a feeling that you can do business with them anytime you want to.
Those people, by the way,
I should mention, are Triumph Books.
We'll let the cat out of the bag that my next book will be out next October. And
very good.
Try to finish it up right now. It is an autobiography that I'm helping a former Bruin put together. And let's just say,
okay,
Bruins fans will like it a lot. Not because I'm helping write it, because of the subject of the whole thing.
I thought it was a romantic vampire book you told me.
It might
me,
be, yeah.
That's not what it
working
is.
On
Doc, I'm
Dale
curious.
Arnold is the Anne Rice of hockey.
Yeah.
I'm curious, all your time calling games, was there a player or maybe a couple of players that you looked forward to calling their games the most over your career?
No, not necessarily individual players because of their skill, but I sure like there were a lot of individual players that I like going into the dressing room and sitting next to, that's for sure. And for different reasons. For example, Patrice Bergeron, I like talking to him because he was a dog guy. He has a dog that appears on the Bruins calendar every year named Wilson. I think Wilson is a Maltese, but is a cute little white dog, and so we talk about dogs. But I got a chance to ask him, too, because I was going, you always discover things when you go through what we used to rely on called the Guide and Record Book, but now they stopped publishing it a couple of years ago. But I noticed that he had had time with the Bruins, and then during the season-long lockout in 04-05, he went back and played in Providence. Well, he wouldn't have had to do that. And so it begged the question, why did you take that year when you really didn't have to? And he said, well, I hadn't really been an NHLer that long. I wanted to keep my skills going. And he said, I didn't speak very well. I didn't have the language down very well. And I thought another year of playing and consistently rather than staying out or going somewhere overseas, I thought another year would help my language. Well, sure. I mean, he speaks great. And he's also a really good player and a great guy. And one of the other things I remember about him was what was written about him by Kevin Paul DuPont. And I saved it, and I credited Kevin when I repeated it in a Boston-Washington game. He compared Patrice Bergeron to Arthur Fiedler, that over the years, there is never any drop-off in consistency of performance, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, what a great comparison, and what a wonderful personality. Zdeno Chara is another one. I mean, what a wonderful person. And what a good person, and what kind of sacrifices that he continues to make, not only the broken jaw and the ovation that he received before game five of the final last year, but the good soul that he is to the community, too. And there have been a bunch of characters. Of course, Dale and I shared time in Portland, Maine with the Maine Mariners, a bunch of characters who were created in the image of the Flyers in the 1970s, in which you would have two lines of scorers and two lines of delightful thugs. And I emphasize delightful. Brian Burke was one of those in the first year. He was a right winger and was assigned a very hot college player who had great potential in the Montreal system named Dave Lumley. And he was assigned to check Dave Lumley during the playoffs, and Maine eliminated Nova Scotia in seven hotly contested games and went on and defeated New Haven in the very first year of the franchise in Portland. And then Brian went on to law school, and I rode across from Brian on the bus in those 14-hour bus rides occasionally to Halifax. At least they weren't dull. They were long, but they weren't dull because of Brian. So a quick story here. I hope fighting doesn't bother people because it was the 1970s. So anyway, he goes to law school, and he's there based in Boston in the second year. And the Mariners, his old buddies, go wheeling into Springfield to have a game with the Indians. And as Dale will remember, the broadcast location at the Big E Coliseum was sort of a shaky press box that was not very far from the two team benches, which were on the near side of the ice. And there was glass behind the benches, but right behind those were about two or three rows of individual chair seats. So anyway, Brian was there. He showed up and I said, people love you in Portland. Would you mind coming on the radio and just putting on headsets and reacting to the game as my color commentator? Because on the road, you didn't have anybody. And he said, no, that's fine. So anyway, he was just great. So the first period ends and we get into the second period and things start to get pretty rowdy on the ice, and the rowdiness around the Mariners bench spreads to the fan population, who start to have some words, and then eventually the words escalate, and there's a disturbance down at the bench. And the last thing that Brian Burke said over the air that our listeners heard was, "Doc, I'm sorry, I've got to leave. The boys need my help." And the headset came off, and he was down there. And I thought at the time that he peeled off his orange jersey for the last time and won a Calder Cup championship the year before that he had forgotten how to use the roundhouse rights, but he had not forgotten, as I saw that night in Springfield.
Oh, that's unbelievable. We're speaking to the living legend himself, Doc Emrick, here on Dale and Keefe, 2017 Sports Illustrated's greatest sportscaster of all time, and I am a fan and would not disagree. Doc, I became a fan, obviously, like many Bruins fans, listening to your calls in the playoffs, 2011. Obviously, I'm sure so many people became lifetime fans when the Bruins won the Stanley Cup, but I was won over forever in defeat, actually, for the Bruins. Game one of the 2013 Stanley Cup Finals, where the Bruins and the Blackhawks played to just about the end of a triple overtime. And I remember I was up about 1:30 in the morning, and everybody was just tired, and you could see that they were fighting through it on the ice. And you were calling that game as if you were just fresh and ready, like you still had your fastball after about 5.5 hours of relentless nonstop hockey. Where did you get that energy from, and how over the years did you develop the ability to never miss a beat like that?
Oh, I don't know. You know, if you love the sport and you love what you're doing, you feel you don't even think about that. I remember talking to one of the Blackhawks, Brent Seabrook, and I heard from him yesterday, and I reminded him of this. It was a triple overtime game that the Blackhawks were playing in Anaheim, and then they flew back the next day, and then the day after that, I saw him in the dressing room, and I said, How are you still standing after playing whatever number of minutes it was? It was almost 50% of the game he and Duncan Keith played. And he smiled and he said, "Are you kidding? This is fun." And so the fatigue factor doesn't enter in when it's fun. And you also feel a responsibility to the audience to be on top of whatever is going to happen. The referees that I've talked to have felt the same way. You don't want to make a mistake on what turns out to be the winning goal, like I did in Patrick Kane's that I wasn't able to see in 2011 when Chicago scored in overtime against Philadelphia, and that turned out to be the winning goal in a clinch, the Stanley Cup. And the fact that other guys didn't see it either is no excuse, because as Patrick Waugh once said when he gave up 7 goals in a game in Detroit, "I'm paid to get those." I am paid to get those. But you really want to be on it all the time, and you can sleep later that day. So you don't have to worry about what's ahead. There's nothing to save it for when you're in a triple overtime game. And I'm glad that despite the defeat, that you were impressed with what I was doing, but more importantly, what the athletes are doing, because it is a marvel what they can accomplish, especially when you look at what Tampa Bay did in the very first game that they played against a team that wiped them out last year, Columbus. They went 5 overtimes, and then they had a day off, and then they had to play again. I mean, it's a marvel what these athletes can do.
The week that Doc Emrick announced his retirement also ended up being the week that his brand new book was released. It's called Off Mic: How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. And I got an advanced copy thanks to my good friends at Triumph Books. As I read through much of your story, I thought about, you know, going back to the 8 years I spent in the minor leagues and how that helped forge who I am. Some of the best friends I have in the game today, those friendships were forged on those 14-hour bus rides that you described earlier, Doc. Do you find that's the case, and you think wistfully back to the days when Bob McCammon or Tom McVie were coaching teams, and Mike Buznick and Frank Bathe and people like that that you got to watch as well?
Yeah, you sure do. And those are the people that really teach you the sport. And every once in a while, someone will pay me the ultimate compliment, was, "You taught me to love the sport." Hey, those people taught me to love it. All I did was just pass on what I'd learned from them. Yeah, that's and even Springfield was only, 2 hours from Portland? That was one of our closest trips. But it's a marvel of what you wind up learning in just short bus rides like that, let alone the long ones that went around the Bay of Fundy up to Halifax. I was just talking with one of the broadcasters in Toronto, John Shannon, who was a producer for a number of years. And we were talking about other broadcasters that I had learned from, and you know, like coaches, first year coaches or second year coaches, you say, your coaching style, has it changed? And they will usually say, yes. When I started, I was a collection of all the guys I played for. I just took the best of all of them. And I think that was the way I was, and maybe you were too, Dale. When we start, we're a hybrid of people that we've listened to. And the part of Danny Gallivan that I always admired was his use of vocabulary and a sense of humor. We would go to Halifax and play the Nova Scotia Voyagers, who were the Montreal farm team, on Friday and Sunday, but you didn't play Saturday because that was hockey night in Canada. And one of the guys that sat behind me on those bus rides, Terry Murray, who won the AHL Best Defenseman Award in back-to-back years and later went on to coach in the NHL, he was a Danny Gallivan fan too. And we would always hope that on that night that we had off a couple of times a year on Saturday night, that it would be a Montreal Canadiens game that would be broadcast in our area. It wasn't always sure. Sometimes it was Toronto. But it would be a Montreal game and that Danny would be describing it, because we would be lucky to get maybe a call that would say, and now Robinson through center to Napier, who will marry Pat Hughes' sister in June. Or something like, and now for the Rangers, John Stone left the puck behind, a necessity for scoring most time.
Doc, you served as a mentor to a young Dale Arnold back in the AHL. Do you remember what your first impression of Dale was?
I'm sorry, I don't do impressions. My training is in psychiatry. No, too much for old movie lines. No, he was a hard-working erstwhile guy that got a great chance thanks to Ed Anderson, who was president of the Maine Mariners, and I still hear from to this day. And later owned the Providence Bruins. Ed Anderson gave Dale his first chance, and he worked hard, which all of us had to do. Otherwise, we were out the door. That was the way it was in the Flyers organization. You worked hard, and you worked your way up, and then he got many opportunities because of his hard work. Were you in the arena in 77, 78 season, that first season? No, you were at Bowden then.
Yeah, but I was in the arena from time to time as a fan. I'll tell Ed Anderson called me right after I graduated from Bowden, and he said, Dale, we got a guy doing our games who's way too good to be here very long. He said, I want you to come down here, work with him, learn from him, do whatever he does, do whatever he says, and then you'll follow Mike Emmerich as the voice of the Maine Mariners. And that meant you had to put up with me on those short bus rides to Springfield from time to time, at a time when you probably had much better things to do. And I remember vividly, we're in Springfield one night, and there's a blizzard outside. And I say something along the lines of, well, it's really snowing out there. God knows what time we'll get home, or whatever it was. And during the commercial break, Doc very quietly said, Dale, always remember, the wives and the girlfriends are listening. You're their only connection. Don't make them worry about the travel home. And I never forgot that. That story stuck with me forever.
Well, I'm glad that I had the foresight to think about it. I don't know if I would today. We all have these airline charters that bring the teams to and from. That's good that I said that, though. That is something that is meaningful, because they do care a lot about what happens. Bob Chase told me a story in Fort Wayne about a great player that eventually won four Stanley Cups named Gordy Lane. And Bob called the Fort Wayne Comets games, and he was a mentor of mine. For over 60 years, he called the Comets games. But it was on radio, and it was in the days before there was any kind of television broadcast. And so Fort Wayne Comets never lost fights. And so Gordy Lane was, and because it was 50,000 watts, Gordy Lane had been a Fort Wayne Comet, but was now a Dayton Gem. And the Comets were playing a back-to-back Saturday-Sunday series with the Gems. And when Gordy Lane got off the bus back in Dayton following a game in Fort Wayne in which he had had a fight, and reportedly had really cleaned up on the poor Fort Wayne comment that he had fought, his wife was still awake. And she said, "Gordy, are you all right?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm fine." He said, "Well, I was listening to the game on the Fort Wayne station, and it sounded like that you got really beat up badly." So the next afternoon when the Fort Wayne bus rolled into the Dayton parking lot, Gordy was there to meet Bob Chase when he got off the bus to make sure that from now on he described it properly, which, of course, did not change a thing.
So, Doc, I wanted to know, I in looking over your career, I saw that you actually called a couple of football games for CBS in 1992 and 1993. It's just sort of a fun game to play now that we've got all this perspective on your illustrious career calling hockey. If you didn't call hockey, is there another sport that you like or loved enough that you would have loved to have called? Or would, what would the alternate universe Doc Emrick be a play-by-play voice of?
I guess baseball. That was the other sport that I'd liked. And until I saw my first game 60 years ago this December, baseball was what I had an ambition to do. I was never going to be a really good athlete, and I knew that. So at 14, when my parents took me to that first hockey game in Fort Wayne, going into that arena that night, I wanted to be a baseball announcer. And coming out, I had changed my vocation. You can imagine what a high school guidance counselor in a rural town of 600 would have thought when a kid sitting across the desk says, "I want to be a hockey announcer." It just would make no sense. Especially in the late 1950s, early 1960s, but that's what I really wanted to do.
If you get the opportunity, pick up Mike's brand new book. It's called Open Mike. It was written with Kevin Allen, and I had a chance to read it a couple of weeks ago. Great stories. As you can tell, Doc is the consummate storyteller. And I'm thinking that now that you've got retirement staring you in the face, that means more time with your animals and, of course, more time with your beloved wife, Joyce.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the animals enter into a lot of what Joyce and I are doing. 100% of what I get on the book goes to the hands-on care of animals, and a lot of it is done around here with veterinarians and with getting gas cards for volunteers that tend to creatures of all kinds, not just dogs and cats. I received a video from one veterinarian I didn't know that when a turtle has a cracked shell that it takes almost 6 months to heal because reptiles heal much, much slower. But this veterinarian, God bless him, took care of this turtle and then sent me a video of releasing it back into a pond. And it brings a smile to your face, especially when you have a hand in helping out this way. So that's what we quietly and anonymously do. And so this, plus, I'm sure you have these, Dale. If you've seen the TV program Storage Wars, you know that I have one of those units, and inside of it are all of these old programs and guides that separately don't have much value at all. But I am thinking and hoping that collectively, maybe, for example, a Bruins fan might not care about a 1979-80 Bruins guide. But if I bundled up like 35 years in a row of Bruins guides, maybe they would want to make out a check or bid for them, and then I could turn that money over to animal causes too. So that's and the most important thing is I would empty the storage unit in doing that with all of the guides that I've collected from all of the teams over the years. So that's a project that will take me a lot of time and should consume a lot of time through the winter and maybe into next year.
One last one for me, Doc. In the 2014 Olympics, you were calling the USA-Canada game, and you described puck movement with 153 different words. Somebody counted. Wow. There's a list of it. Was that something... like, what was the motivation behind that? Is that just something that happened, or did you want to get extra creative that day, or how did that come to be?
That's just how I talk. A guy that I worked with.
I don't have 153 words in my vocabulary, let alone the puck movement. That was unbelievable.
No, it's nice of you to point that out. It's non-conspiratorial. I have no. I didn't have any kind of a list of words to use. A guy that I first met when he was doing the Dayton Gems games in the IHL, Lyle Stieg, who did have 1 year of doing the Washington Capitals, told me when I was a grad student at Miami University, he said, one thing that you should consider if you get into describing hockey is try to come up with different ways to say the repeated things that happen in a game. He said, if you say dump the puck in from center ice every time that you see that, you'll drive people nuts. So I tried to come up with different ways of saying the same thing, and I try not to repeat them each time during a game, but no, you know, I that's the way I talk. You know, Dale will tell you that. That's just the way I create sentences. The dogs don't understand me.
No,
but if people understand me, then that's the most important thing. But thank you for mentioning that.
I will miss the visits we would have when you would come to town, but I've got your number, and I hope you don't mind if I reach out from time to time just to say hi and see how you're doing.
I so appreciate that you have read the book, and I hope that whoever this mystery person is, that you are helping out with the book, that I get a copy next fall when it comes out.
You will, I can promise you. Doc, it's always a pleasure. Okay. Thank you so much, and best of luck in your retirement.
Thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Doc.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Great to talk to you guys.